and has been an epidemiologist with the County of San Diego Health and Human Services Agency Division of Emergency Medical Services for the past 15 years. She is responsible for ongoing surveillance and data analysis of the countywide pre-hospital STEMI and stroke systems, and also conducts research activities for intermittent studies and grants. She'll be speaking today about heat index and spatial surveillance. Over to you.
Thank you. I'm sure heat is the furthest thing from everybody's mind in these days like this in Boston. I have no disclosures. So a little bit about our program. Basically, we look at heat events as being the possibility of people being exposed to heat events, experiencing heat exhaustion, heat stroke, which can result in organ failure, brain, and even death. I think all of us know that. Heat emergencies are actually slow to develop other than other emergencies. So the cumulative effect can be seen day after day, not something that's going to happen immediately. Annually in California, we contribute about 20 of our deaths to heat events. In 2006, a prolonged heat event resulted in the death of 138 people over the course of 13 days. This event prompted the establishment of our excessive heat response plan. So one of the groups that we work with, or a group in San Diego, the National Weather Service, basically looked over their plan in 2013. They reviewed that the weather data and the heat-related mortality from San Diego County and the surrounding counties, Orange, Riverside, and San Bernardino, they determined that the heat alert that they based this on was not based on heat-related injury or illness. It was basically mostly on the temperature. So they decided to revamp this information so that it reflect not on the high temperatures alone or the heat index alone. So for example, in this table, you can see some of the years that we had lower number of warnings, we actually had more injuries or illnesses. So they wanted to do something to kind of fix this issue. So they collaborated with us. And they set out to improve the forecasting of medically significant excessive heat events. They proposed new heat warning criteria that was based on significant deviations from the high temperatures. They revised their heat advisory and excessive heat warning by climate zone and by month. They also did continue to look at the heat index. So the new heat advisory criteria, this is a lower level alert. It's issued 12 to 48 hours in advance, and it's usually for a shorter duration. The conditions are below a warning criteria, but may have unusual areas of heat. An example would be higher temperatures on our coast. The excessive heat warning is more of a major level alert, again issued 12 to 48 hours in advance, but this is for a more longer duration, usually lasting over 3 days or more. The conditions include high ambient temperatures for prolonged duration, and that have extreme departures from our normal temperatures, possibly setting records. And these tables are the tables that we receive from the National Weather Service giving the criteria for each, and I'll go into those further. Our excessive heat response plan utilizes the National Weather Service's new criteria, and we revised our plan based on this. Prior to this, we really had a much more long process to get to the different stages of our plan, and this really helped us out. It decreased our workload. The plan establishes guidelines for heat emergencies to minimize adverse health effects in an excessive heat. And it's based on the California Emergency Management Agency Contingency Plan for heat emergencies. And it is operational from May 1st to September 30th, but may extend if needed. So heat events may apply to any or all of our geographic areas. In San Diego County, we actually have four very distinct geographic zones or climate zones. We have the coast, or our maritime zone. We have transitional or inland or valleys, our interior, which is our mountains, and then we have the desert. So seasonal excessive heat forecasts can cause components of the plan to be activated at different times, and the activation triggered by temperatures in excess of the average in each climate zone. The task force of our plan includes a lot of key stakeholders. We play one part of this, the emergency medical services or emergency preparedness. You can see everywhere from the medical examiner to aging and independent services to many other areas also are players in this plan. The plan has three phases. The first phase is seasonal readiness. It's the pre-season planning. The second is the heat alert, and it's activated by a heat advisory. The phase three is a heat emergency, which is activated by an excessive heat warning. A little more detail about the first phase. This is our seasonal readiness. It starts in March, and it's basically planning and awareness. We're holding our initial meetings with all the stakeholders, reviewing our materials, and reviewing our climate zone locations. Activities include surveilling the system for heat-related injury and illness and death, and that is my particular piece of this plan. We monitor the forecast, and we notify our public health officer or other key stakeholders, our task force members, if we're about to enter into phase two. Phase two is the heat alert, and it's triggered by the heat advisory issued by the National Weather Service, or an excessive heat warning of a limited duration or just limited to a geographic area. And you can see here the new criteria they made, took the months May to October, and for our different zones gave us the high temperatures, which it was the trigger. Activities include sending heat emergency notifications to the State Warning Center, enhancing the surveillance of heat-related deaths, medical emergencies, 911 calls, transports, and ED visits, monitoring the National Weather Service at least twice daily now, and again notifying our key stakeholders if we're going to move into phase three. Phase three is the heat emergency, and again triggered by the excessive heat warning. And here we see higher temperatures in all of our four climate zones. Again, the activities include notifying our key stakeholders, opening our operations centers, our medical operations center, or our emergency operations centers if needed, enhancing surveillance, and notifying the pre-hospital providers and our hospitals if they are expected to see a surge in patients, and monitoring our cool zones for the usage and if there's any needs that we can help them out with. Just a little bit of background about San Diego County. We're over 3.1 million in population with an additional 15 million overnight tourists each year. We're very large military presence, over 4,500 square feet, and we're very geographically isolated. We have Mexico to our south, Pacific Ocean to our west, and Camp Pendleton military installation to our north. And again, this is our climate zones, very distinct climate zones, and they are designated by NOAA. So this is our emergency response plan in action. We actually activated this past summer from June 25th to July 3rd, and these are kind of the phases and steps that we went through, our timeline. From June 25th, 26th, a special weather statement from the National Weather Service was given to the public about the approaching heat, and basically this is just kind of how they present it on their website. And we also received emails from our partners at the National Weather Service to allow us to prepare. This heat event was forecasted for our valleys, mountains, and deserts. On June 26th, the excessive heat warning went into place for our mountains, deserts, and then they actually extended it to July 2nd. And by July 3rd, it was predicted that we would end our heat wave. So these are some thermal maps that we received from the National Weather Service, basically showing the ambient temperatures in each on each day, and you can see just from looking here that June 29th was our hottest day. That deep maroon red is showing the high temperatures in our deserts and mountains. Again, this is some of the information that the National Weather Service gives us, and this is after the fact, obviously. We had some records set. The white areas in the map there show that these were the highest maximum temperatures, between 120 and 129, and believe it or not, there was only like one record set in those areas. The others were not high records. Now, these are using GIS, these are the maps that we produce at EMS and that we share with our task force members. And it breaks down the different climate zones and where our cool zones exist. So on June 28th, we saw an excessive heat warning for the deserts and mountain areas. And I just have maps for each day to toggle through. You can see here on the next day, June 29th, which was the hottest day of this heat event, that the valleys went into a heat advisory mode or phase. This was June 30th, still a heat excessive warning in the desert and mountain areas. And then we started our cool down on July 1st and July 2nd. And then back to pretty much normal except for the desert areas. This is just a summary of the same information on the maps, but it's just a way that we present it to our key stakeholders so that they can see in our coastal area, we never hit an advisory or warning. The valleys only one day, and then the mountains were 5 of the 6 days, and the desert never left the heat warning phase. Looking at the pre-hospital side of things, provider impressions are basically the reason why someone might call 911. It's kind of like a chief complaint. So for the 6 days that we were under our official heat warning, there were 45 heat-related cases. And we look at each one of those and we kind of try and categorize them. 47% were for dizzy, weak, and nausea complaints. 27% were syncope or near syncope, and 18 were for heat injury or illness. Most of these, 84%, were in mild status, and 73% were actually transported to the hospital. In looking in the summary of these cases, we see that our age range mostly was from 10 to 89, so it was hitting all age groups. The heat was affecting all age groups. And some of the activities that the patients were doing prior to the 911 call were basically just being out in the hot sun, walking, waiting at the bus stop, shopping, just going about their daily activities. Working outside, there was a firefighter in training, people were gardening, hiking, participating in sports, even at the beach. A few of the patients were in hot house or apartment, and some were using public transportation. So when we look at the high heats compared to our number of patients, we can kind of see that it's showing that the day that we had the highest temperatures, we also had the higher number of patients. And as the temperature decreased, our patient numbers actually decreased too. And this is some of the information that the National Weather Service really wants to look at more and more because it helps them make their, create their criteria, and we work in collaboration. So this was our first year that we've kind of both have used the new plan, so we hope that this will just increase as we go on from year to year. Just a little bit about our cool zones. This is one of the public announcements that go out that just tells patients where to go, what to do, how to be careful, and where to get more information if they need to use one of the cool zones. The cool zones activity for our heat event this year were that there were increased number of phone calls, looking for information for where to go. They operated their regular hours except for the desert areas, which makes sense. They issued fans and also bus passes for those to travel to the cool zones if they couldn't make it on their own. So the new National Weather Service systems improve forecasting of heat events since criteria is based on significant deviation from average temperatures and set by climate zone and month. We now have more standardized alert messages from both the county public health services and the National Weather Service. Our excessive heat plan is now based on the new system, and it provides a more efficient method for advanced preparation in heat emergencies. I'd just like to acknowledge our partners at the local National Weather Service and all of our county paramedics and pre-hospital agencies and hospitals. And this is our contact information if you have any further questions later.
Yes, Nara.
I believe that you said in the coastal area of San Diego, and I know a lot of people don't even have air conditioning there, that it never reached the emergency or the excessive status. So how many of those pre-hospital transports came from the coastal area, even though, as you mentioned, some of them were at the beach? So I'm curious whether still were pre-hospital calls related to heat illness and so forth from the area.
Right. I think just in San Diego in general, a lot of people aren't used to the heat. So even though they might be at the beach and it's a more higher temperature at the beach than people are used to, even though it's not meeting the criteria to go into an advisory or a warning, that people still tend to be affected by the heat. Even if there's no cloud coverage and it's the sun. So when the nurses at the hospital actually document the reason why patients are calling 911, it can fall into the heat injury or illness category. I believe that out of the 45 cases, there were maybe like 3 or 4 that actually occurred at the beach. Yeah.
You showed a fairly short time range for the pre-hospital care data. I'm wondering if you have a longer time series that you're evaluating, and I'm also wondering, you mentioned that you enhance surveillance during heat emergency periods. Does that affect the likelihood of reporting, or is there something else you do to enhance surveillance? The reason for both these concerns is to be sure that your evaluation actually picks up what the system is doing as opposed to an artifact.
Right. Enhancing, and I guess in the term that I use, is a lot of times we'll keep the data at EMS, and there are certain levels of the phases of our plan that we will then disseminate and enhance the dissemination of the information. Different, the plan that I presented here is very, very basic. There's a lot of phases and steps and activities that are going on through each phase.
Any other questions?